And welcome to Mortgage Mag for another Thursday morning here in the studios of 92.1 RTR FM. Joining you this hour, myself, Jodie Hoffman, and Tonji Hansen. We've got a big program coming your way, and I hope you can stay tuned. We're going to be talking more about genocide in the Wildflower State today on the program. A lot of our mob headed off to the State Library yesterday for a special screening of it, but do want to remind our listeners of the big event coming up for this important documentary on Sunday the 28th of April at Luna in Leederville. We'll give you more details about that. And we're going to be speaking to a couple of women who have been involved in genocide in the Wildflower State. Marie Pryor and daughter Lorraine join us on the program to have a yarn with us. What an extraordinary screening this is. If you haven't seen it already, you really must go and see it. We're also going to meet an amazing woman, longtime friend of this amazing Yorga, Beth Manchester, in a new role, such an important role. Nothing but respect for Beth Manchester. We'll be speaking with her shortly on the program. And later in the program, one of the founders of the Mortgage Mag program, Wayne Binder, will be having a yarn with us as well. He saw genocide in the Wildflower State yesterday, and we'll find out his views on that. Tonji, another big program. How are you?
I'm good, Jodie. It's great to be back with you again. And it's a massive program, and it's such an important topics to be talking about and sharing with our listeners out there today on Radioland. And we're hoping that Jimbo is recovering and looking after himself and doing as the doctors say and not as Jimbo would like to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd like to be the doctor who's telling him what he has to do. Jim hurt his foot, so we hope you're sitting up there with a nice cup of tea in your hand, Jim, and listening to the program and well on the way to recovery.
Even though the tea was the one that caused all the issues for him.
Oh, a cool cup of tea. Tonji, how's your week been?
No, it's been great, Jode, and it's been really, for me, I guess it's been really exciting to, you know, show the documentary with our members and our supporters that have come along to watch the screening, a private screening at the State Library, and we'd like to thank the State Library for their support and assistance throughout the three days that we had there. And it was just great to, you know, show the screening with our mob. And you know, obviously the documentary is called Genocide in the Wildflower State. So it's a lot of truth-telling, and we hope that many of our listeners out there in the wider community will come along and see the documentary that is showing at Luna Theatres on Sunday the 28th of April at 4 p.m.
The screenings this week that took place at the State Library, Tonji, they were screenings for mob. It must have been very emotional.
Yeah, it was. I guess, you know, everybody's on a different journey in terms of their own personal journeys, Jode. And I think it was just so comforting that we were able to be in a nice space, you know, nice space instead of standing around the graveside, which we normally do. And you know, that's sadly a place where we find ourselves too often and comforting each other. And we're dealing with the ongoing issues in our own lives, and but to be able to come to the State Library and to sit down and watch the documentary, talk about it, ask some questions, and you know, empower each other, I think. You know, empower each other, and the audience were really really glad to be there, in a sense, to see this documentary in our mob, and walking away and as you know, our mob always asking lots of questions and going, only if. But, you know, we are in this current state we are in at the moment. And it was just, a nice opportunity to come and see this for the first time and bring family.
And that's the thing, Tonji, there is so much strength in numbers. And I think that when we're talking about compensation for our stolen generations, a lot of people have had to come forward after a lifetime of trauma, horrific memories, and in many cases tell their stories for the very first time. So to sit in, you know, a theatre surrounded by other mob who get it is very empowering.
Yeah, it is. And I guess, you know, even for me, Joe, just coming into the city this morning, I was listening on another radio station, those AM people, and, you know, talking about things that are happening in community. I would encourage them to come along and see this documentary. This is about trauma. This is about genocide. And this is what, sadly, these are some of the issues that we have in our community today, because we've never addressed them, and nor has the government.
I think the point you make is a really important one. This is important for media to view. Too often, the images and the stories that we see in the papers or in mainstream media are a misrepresentation of our mob. It's like, oh, there's these crime sprees, or there's this amazing sports person, you know, aren't these people fantastic? But there's none of that middle ground to actually get the understanding of, hang on a minute, we need to understand the trauma that mob have gone through. And this is really important. And RTR, I know, are running screenings for their own staff here at the station. And it's all about empowering people with that knowledge so that as professional and responsible media broadcasters, the right information is getting out and people actually do know what happened with us.
Exactly, Jode. And I think, you know, looking at settlement, looking at issues that took place, the disempowerment of our own people and removing people and, you know, isolating people, that's genocide. And we know that this took place right around the globe. We know that the impacts are ongoing, and we need to come together as a society and look at our shared history together. How can we do things better? Get a greater appreciation of what trauma is and what intergenerational trauma is, and how that impacts one's health and well-being.
This is Mudich Mag. Tonji Hansen and Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you this hour. Very shortly on the program, Beth Manchester joins us, but first let's have some music. Yeah, always good to introduce you to some great First Nations music here on the Mudich Mag program. And that was a band called The Cruisers and Mother's Loving. And before that, Books Kid with Talking to Myself. Books Kid, First Nations singer, songwriter and producer of the Wurundjeri Bibbulmun Nation living on Whadjuk country. This is the Mudich Mag program. Tonji Hansen and Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you this hour. And we're going to meet some beautiful women right now, Tonji.
Yes, we are, Jode. And on the line we have Mari Pryor and her daughter Lorraine Pryor. How are you both today?
Good, thank you. We are good.
Part of the introduction is, who's your mob? Where are you from?
Well, I'm Aunty Mari Pryor, and my mob are the Whadjuk, Ballardong, and I've also got ancestral ties to Nala Kalabuja, come down from like the Bennells, Yumses, Kickets and Garlets, and a lot of other mob that's linked into our family tree, yeah.
And Kaya Wandu, my name's Lorraine Pryor, and I'm a proud Whadjuk Noongar York with ancestral ties to Ballardong through my grandmother, whose name is Sylvia Garlet Kickett, and through my grandfather, my ancestral ties lay with Nala Kalabuja.
Wow. Big mob there, big mob.
Yeah.
So how are you both doing today?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, we're outside under a lovely tree, thinking, yeah, we'll have a good yarn with you today on this lovely day.
No, that's great. And I see you both attended the Genocide in the Wildflower State screening over the last couple of days. How are you feeling after watching the documentary?
Well, it just took me really like I just started thinking about all the, you know, all the mob that was in the mission with me, and thinking like if they was all here today with me, you know, it would be a different story. But I'm saying like, you know, it's just so sad because we lost them all, you know, and I see some of their kids, you know, and I just grab them and hug them, and yeah, even with my brothers, because I lost all them too. And me reaching 70, and they all went in their, you know, like 40s and 50s, and even in their 60s, you know, I just went back down memory lane and just started thinking about it all, you know?
Yeah. And it is. I mean, both years, you know, you're in the documentary and you're telling your stories. And, you know, Lorraine, your daughter, is talking about her experiences and now her a greater understanding of what trauma is and what intergenerational trauma is. Can you share some of that, Lorraine, and how you felt after watching the documentary?
Yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of anger because of seeing how our mob was treated. There's going to be a lot of hurt. There's going to be, you know, the tears. But, you know, there's also the resilience of our mob and the courage of how they speak and tell their stories of the traumas that they went through. You know, I had no understanding of any of this growing up, you know, because a lot of our mob kept it all quiet about their history, about their childhood, and didn't speak about it. It was never spoken about. So how could we know and understand, you know, their upbringing when we, which also impacts our upbringing? So, yeah, now that I, you know, truly understand intergenerational trauma, you know, I'm happy that, you know, I have that education now, and that's only through Yokai and, you know, being around the elders and being around mum, of having that awareness about, you know, stolen generation. It's something that really needs to be put out in the community for our mob because, you know, the majority of our mob that are in prison still have no awareness of where their traumas are coming from. And they're, you know, they're just numbing their pain with the alcohol and the drugs, which, you know, then they start doing crime to be able to feed that addiction. So, which, you know, that what was the story that I went through with my life. I was covering my trauma up with ice. I had a 10-year addiction to that stuff, and ever since I've been around my mob now, you elders, and learning about, you know, the stolen generation, it's made me stronger, and it's something, you know, that I'd never look back on that drug again.
Mm. And I think for me, what stands out and what is really powerful about what you shared in the documentary is that you were damaged. You were damaged before you even was born, while you were sitting in your mother's womb, who was carrying that trauma of her own experiences. And I guess it's for us as people and human beings is trying to get a greater understanding and appreciation of what that trauma looks like, because that's the reality of the world that, you know, you've come through. And, you know, only for you seeing that and acknowledging that as a young person, knowing that you were disadvantaged right from the beginning.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's very sad that us Aboriginal people have to go through that, you know, like being broken before you're even born, you know, how does that look like? What does that look like to white people, you know what I mean? They'll never understand that feeling that we're going to be, you know, growing up in a world with that low self-esteem, you know, that disconnection from culture, that lost identity. These are all these issues that have, you know, escalated from the colonisation days. And we blame our parents when we're growing up. We get angry with our parents, you know, and think, oh, you know, what are you drinking for? You know, what are you doing this and doing that for? But really, they're only coping as best as they can because of what they've gone through. And we don't understand that at the time of us being, you know, young. But we need to really educate our mob now in that space, especially our young ones in the schools, because we need to stop that intergenerational trauma because, you know what, us mob, we got intergenerational power. Mm. And we've got to bring the positiveness back on all this.
Our guests are Marie Pryor and Lorraine Pryor, mother and daughter, who both appeared in Genocide in the Wildflower State. Look, thank you so much for having a yarn with us today on Mooditj Mag. You're speaking to Jodie now. The documentary is a very, very powerful thing, and I'm wondering, when you got involved in it, did you realise that it may also have a healing effect, as it obviously has in terms of you, Lorraine? You know, it's very powerful when you say, you know, you're broken before you're even born. It's been a healing journey, has it?
Oh, definitely. You know, like ever since, you know, I came out of prison, I've had to find ways to cope with my emotions. And because, you know, we were uneducated back in them days, and our parents, you know, they were so broken. So how do you do that? So luckily for, you know, Yokai being created, I don't think we would have known any of this about our past history. You know, our history is very, very important. You know, a lot of these wadlers say, I'll just get over it. How can you get over it when it's still real now, you know? Mm. We're still living it. We've still got kids going into care, but it's just in another name, you know? And us Aboriginal people, I think our generation now are the ones that need to put our foot down on this ground ourselves, and make that 360 change for our people.
And would it be correct to say, Lorraine, that it's strengthened your relationship with Mum Marie as well?
Oh, yeah, because she's gone on a healing journey, and it's, you know, it's great. I can see my mum growing within herself. You know, she was very, very quiet, very, very reserved, you know, didn't talk about anything. Even, like, you know, on gatherings, she'd be very quiet. But now she's found her voice. Mm. She's, you know, she's doing a lot of things that she didn't do before. She's, you know, I can see the strength in her, and it gives me that strength as well. So, you know, the more we tell our story, I know it's hard, but we must go back to that space and revisit it to be able to heal.
Marie, what was the process? Sorry, Lorraine.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, I've been talking now about my story for the last five years, I'd say, and, you know, I've just, the first time I told my story, I cried. Yeah. But now I can stand up proudly and say everything, you know. So it is a healing journey every time, and you get stronger and stronger.
Yeah. Oh, and together and united as well, that would have brought a lot of mob together for this screening, and the process of the interviewing taking place as well, and down in Albany. Marie, how's the process been for you from, you know, that very first meeting where, you know, they said, look, we're going to do something with this. We've met these extraordinary people, and there's a story that needs to be told. How was it for you getting involved in that from the onset?
Oh, well, I was really pleased to be involved, because I thought, like me, you know, like in my, where I was in Maribank Mission, like in my house where I grew up with all these sister girls, I'm the only one that's left out of that cottage, you know, all them girls. Wow. And I thought, well, I'm the only one left, so I've got to get out there and talk for all the ones that are gone, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what made me stronger, because I thought, no, you know, we can't let this rest. We just got to tell the truth. And this is all, you know, all the truth telling about the stories about us when we were taken and when we were little kids, you know, and how we lived and how we dealt with it all, you know?
What age were you at Maribank from?
Well, I was in primary school, so I would have been about probably 7, 8.
Yeah.
And then my brothers were younger, and I lost all my brothers. They all passed away because they didn't cope when they got out of there.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
So I think in one way it made me stronger, because when we left the mission, well, we ended up in East Perth. A lot of families were leaving the reserve and heading into East Perth. And then it was just like when we all the families were there, we just sort of was like, that was just one big family. And we all had to, we all lived in poverty there, but we all learned and lived and survived.
It's a very significant area for Noongars, East Perth area, isn't it?
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that, because we've done a documentary about that now. We call it Mootage Footprints.
Yep.
And we've done this documentary of our life in East Perth. And all the elders that was there with us, and all the kids that were there with us, everyone did their story about that too, about Mootage Footprints, East Perth.
Can you tell us about that area then? Because, of course, now you go there and, you know, there's, you know, flash apartment blocks and, you know, beautified yeah. riverbeds and all that. Tell us what it was like in those years. And would we be talking 50s, Lorraine?
Murray, sorry? I'm 50 this year.
I turned 70. So that would have been in the...
You both got beautiful young voices, but Marie, can you paint a picture of those East Perth? Because I'm a Nunga from South Australia, but I've been over here for about 40 years, but I've always heard how significant that area is.
You know what? That probably would have been just like Redfern, because I've been to Redfern too.
Yep.
And it's where all the mob all went there and all camped there and all, you know, lived and shared it. Like, we used to play cards there all the time, do you know? Played troops in the backyard. And where the Optus Stadium is there, that used to be the dump, and we used to all walk there and, you know, and even families were living there, you know, on the dump. So that was going back in them days, and they had the old Kiara pub in Royal Street there, and all our mob used to sit there drinking. All they sold was wine, so they were killing our mob quickly by just giving them wine to drink, you know?
Back then, yeah. And the Coolbaroo Club, that would have been in full swing?
That would have been before my time.
Uh-huh.
We had the Advancement Council back in Beaufort Street. That was our time.
Yeah.
And that would have been my mum's time, the Coolbaroo League, you know?
And the Advancement Council today, you know, houses Noongar Radio, but it's housed so many of our organisations over the years and still standing strong at 207 Beaufort Street. There's a lot of history around that area, and I guess when you're talking about it was, you know, the gathering place for people to come together, I guess the people that you grew up with in Marybank were your family, and was it the same when you were out on the streets as well, catching up with mob?
Yeah, in East Perth, we all just was one big happy family there too. But we've lost a lot of family from there too, East Perth, you know.
Yeah.
Thanks, Murray and Lorraine. I guess what would be a key message you'd like to put out there today to our listeners? Because, you know, we are today on Mooditj Mag, RTR FM, and the wider community here on this station. But also, this message will go out to Noongar Radio tomorrow and through the Great Southern. What is your message after watching the documentary, and what do you want people to do?
I want people to watch the documentary, have an understanding of the documentary, think about, you know, reconciliation. What does reconciliation mean to all these non-Indigenous people, you know? Like, they got to learn about our history. They got to learn and see how our mob used to live and, you know, what has happened to our mob, the disadvantages they had back in the day and the disadvantages we still have today, and why we have the highest number of incarcerated people, why our people are living in poverty. You know, they need to know where it's all came from and why it's all happening. You know, we didn't want this to happen to our people.
Yep. A message from you, Murray?
And I was just, you know, just looking at the documentary too, of all the kids that were taken, there was a cruel lot of kids taken, you know, and all these missions. And, you know, just that's a bit that really hit me, of all the kids, how they were just all just taken. It was just terrible. And the message I'd like to, you know, give out there is that we need to, it's all truth telling now, and all these white people need to listen to what we've got to say. You know, because... And they need to, even like with the government now, like with the same, with the compensation and everything, you know? Because a lot of, you know, we've lost a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, when it does finally happen, a lot of people are going to miss out. So, you know, if we can get money back and give back to their other families so they can put tombstones on the graves, because we've got a lot of ones that have passed now, and a lot of them have got no, you know, no tombstones, no things on their graves, got nothing. You know, and even all the forgotten ones that lock up in Ninortia. Because my great-grandmother, she was in Ninortia. So this is going back a long way. My mother was in Magumba, and my grandmother, my great-grandmother was in Ninortia.
Oh, gee.
You know?
Yeah, look, it's, you know, it is incomprehensible to think what the government policies of the past have done to First Nations peoples, Marie and Lorraine, and you're both such incredibly strong women who have had the strength to stand up and tell your story and regather with brothers and sisters and share the past. And, you know, it is true, White Australia has a black history. And Lorraine, in speaking to you and what you've overcome in your own life, and it's just extraordinary to think what you've gone through, and you've come out the other side stronger with a really important message. What motivates you both now to keep doing what you're doing?
Well, we both are directors of Voice of Hope Aboriginal Corporation, which is an Aboriginal women-led organisation for Aboriginal women that are, you know, like need reintegrating back into the community. Mm-hmm. From prison.
Yep.
So helping our women be empowered again, strengthening their spirit, you know, so that the government, because I tell them the government, all they are doing is benefiting from our struggles. We got to stop that. We got to stop that from happening. And the only way we can stop that is by building each other up and helping our women and our children and our men overcome these issues. You know, take them on a healing journey. Healing is very important. Reconnecting back to their culture is very important. So by us, you know, having our little initiative for our women, we're hoping that, you know, we can help drop them statistics of women that are Aboriginal women that are incarcerated.
Yeah, because unfortunately, you know, there is an increase in the number of our women getting locked up and, you know...
Yep.
It's fracturing for families.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It's not the way to rehabilitate. No. There's got to be, and you know, we've got to realise that the current system doesn't work. It is failing our people, and there needs to be other avenues sought. So it's amazing that you guys are working in terms of working with our women to help integrate back into society. But many people being locked up that shouldn't be behind bars anyway.
That's so true. Yep. And there's another thing too. I was just going to say, we need Aboriginal health practitioners working in these prisons, because you know how we go and visit the girls in the prisons. Mm. We had a death in custody last year, and she was a beautiful lady. She was the mother of 10 kids.
Gee.
She was at Wandoo Prison. And you know what? Fiona Stanley is just a hop, skip and jump over the road, and they wouldn't even take her there.
Oh, gee.
She ended up passing away in the prison, and then we had to contact all the family, and she had a little 3-year-old daughter that we sort of was looking after and taking to the hospital and before, you know, her mother passed away.
Oh, look, it's an absolute, absolute tragedy.
That was only last year, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, there's the future of those 10 children as well.
Yeah, exactly. That ripple effect, you know, that just keeps continuing.
And I think that's one of the things that came through with genocide in the Wildflower State, that, you know, it wasn't the one-off incident where, you know, mob was stolen and ripped away from families just basically for the colour of our skin. But it was also, there is this ripple effect. You do have parents, you know, children who were stolen going on to become parents who weren't afforded the opportunity to know what it was like to grow up with family. And then there's all the other social factors that come into it as well. And you know, and throw jail into the mix and, you know, it's a melting pot of just trauma, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like these Wadjalas, you know, non-Indigenous people, you know, how would they like it if their kids were just grabbed out of their hands, out of their homes and taken and never seen again? That, you know, they need to feel that pain, you know, like in that space so that they can try and understand what it's like for our black mob, you know?
Thanks, Lorraine and Murray. It's been a real privilege to have you on air today, and we look forward to the grand opening of Genocide in the Wildflower State, which we'll be screening at Luna Theatres.
Yeah.
And we look forward to the ongoing work that you're doing with Yokai and also with your own business as well, because it's unfinished business.
Yeah, we've still got a long way to go.
Yeah, and look, you know, I hope the government's listening in and recognising the importance of compensation for our stolen generations. Every other state has done it except us and Queensland. I'm not sure what that tells you, but we got to pick up the game and do what's right and rewrite the wrongs of the history. I think you're both extraordinary.
Also, also on that fact, you know, compensating our people, but helping our people, you know, like not just our people spending their money, you know, like on alcohol and drink and all that, you know, helping them put that money in a place where, you know, it's going to grow for them.
Mm. Yeah.
In a financial way, you know, helping them, supporting them in that way as well.
Mm. That's right. Marie Pryor and Lorraine Pryor, thanks for joining us on the Moorditch Mayor program, and look forward to the next time we can yarn as well.
Yeah, thank you. Border one.
See ya.
See ya.
This is Moorditch Mag, Tonji Hansen and Jody Hoffman, and let's pause. Wow, some stories to tell there, Tonji.
Yeah, lots of stories, and I guess it's really unfinished business, Jode, and it's truth telling. It's our shared history as a state and as a country, and I think it's important that we're able to have this platform to share our journeys and our challenges that we'd faced as children being removed, and the pain and suffering and the hurt that it also caused to our parents and our communities, and loss of culture as well. So I think it's the time is now. I think the time is right, and I think Australia needs to really be waking up, and this is the opportunity now for us to do that.
And I think, you know, as well, you know, listening to Marie and Lorraine, it's a lot bigger than being stolen from your family. You know, we talked about being on the streets of East Perth, the significance of those areas. We talked of drugs, we talked of prison, we talked of the overrepresentation of our mob in prison. These are all the intertwining factors with being stolen, not growing up with family, has all these ripple-on effects in so many areas of our lives, and people need to be aware of that.
Exactly, Jode, exactly.
Let's pause and have some music. And this is the Moorditch Mag program. Tonji Hansen and Jody Hoffman in the studio with you. We're going to lighten it up a little bit. Tonji, I am indeed in esteemed company today in the studios of RTR. Flicking over the telly the other night, ABC, people would have been asking for your autographs by now, I reckon, that yourself and Jim Morrison with Miriam Margoyles on ABC TV on Tuesday night. Tell us more.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was a production that we'd done with Miriam about 12 months ago, and Miriam was in Perth, and learning more about the parts of the stolen generation in Australia. Miriam visited myself and Jim at 57 Murray Street, which was the former office of A.O. Neville, Neville the Devil, and Miriam knew very little about the stolen generation. And we had the great pleasure to take Miriam on a journey and share knowledge about the impact of removal of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children in this country. And Jim and I spent 3 days with Miriam in Perth and in the Great Southern, and we took her home to Katanning, to the former place called Carrollup Native Settlement, which became Marybank Baptist Mission during my period. So it was a great opportunity to share that knowledge with Miriam and take her on my journey, and also Jim's mum's journey as well, back to country.
And I'm sure, I mean, the nature of her spending those 3 days with you is of a very serious nature, but being Miriam Margoyles, I can imagine that those road trips must have had a lot of laughs along the way as well.
Oh, many, many laughs. And you don't get to see that on the documentary, but you know, spending 3 days with her was the time was precious. I never knew of her, and it was just so great to be able to take her on that journey and walk her from 57 Murray Street up to the fig tree near Royal Perth Hospital and talk about the significance of the tree, and then also seeing community walking past and, you know, leaving work and on their own business, and realising, hey, that's Miriam over there. And all of a sudden you see the phones come out of their pockets and people are taking photos. And, you know, even people becoming very curious even when we're in Katanning, because we're in Katanning the day after the rally around the Aboriginal Heritage Act, and the town was buzzing in a negative way and media was everywhere, and people were even curious as we sat and had some lunch together before we continued with our documentary.
I've seen some of the shows where she's campervanning her way around Australia, and what I admire about her is that I think she's incredibly gutsy for a woman of, how old would she be now? Would she be 80?
Oh, I'd say probably closely to that.
Yeah, but she just asks straight out. She sort of asks the questions that people think, but think, oh, I better not ask that. But she's just straight out, which I really admire, and I guess that went down very well with yourself and Jim, just that blunt honesty.
Yeah, really blunt. Very saddened that she didn't know the history. Very saddened that she didn't know that, this is what took place in Australia. And, there were times when she had both Jim and I in cramps, and I know Jim recalls, the rose between two thorns, and I've never seen Jimbo go red in my life.
Well, that's an achievement. And I guess that, look, the program that you were on was called Impossibly Australia, and it was on the ABC. So I'm sure if you go to the ABC website, if you did miss it on Tuesday night, you'll be able to play it on catch-up or something. But good on her, and she came to the right fellas to give her the tour of such historical significant areas relating to our stolen generations. But before we go to our next interview, you mentioned the fig tree near Royal Perth Hospital and its significance. What is its significance?
Well, it's the place where our people used to wait before they went down to 57 Murray Street to get rations and support from A.O. Neville the Devil, and his, his disciples, as one would put it. And waiting there patiently for their turn and to be called or to be whistled at or to be, brought down to the building. And so the tree is significant, and it's a part of our history. And obviously this week is Boolaroo Heritage Festival, and Jim and I and my co-convener from bringing them home, Alan Carter, had an opportunity to talk more about 57 Murray Street on Saturday morning and, share that knowledge about this building and the significance of the building, knowing that Neville the Devil was in this space as well. So it's,
God,
for
it
us, it's a really
it?
Important tree. It's a really important part of our history, and we need to continue to share that knowledge. And I guess maybe one day we might be able to paint the strip purple, and purple is healing for our people.
And, Tonji, in my early years of coming to Perth at late 80s, I worked out of 176 Wellington Street, Perth, which was the WA Aboriginal Media Association, but which had previously been the Native Welfare Building.
Mm.
A lot of history up that end.
Yeah, there is. And on many occasions, Neville would be seen sitting there late at night flicking through the cards. Who's next?
Yeah.
Oh, where do I go next?
It's disgusting to think about what's happened. We are running out of time. We have been talking today about genocide in the Wildflower State. Unfortunately, Beth Manchester was unable to join us on the program today, but she'll be popping in for a yarn not another day. But yesterday was a screening at the State Library. Wayne Binder was there. Welcome to Mudditch Mag, a program you're definitely no stranger to. It was you and Jimbo in the early days that first started doing this program. Tell us what it was like being at the State Library for the screening of Genocide yesterday.
Well, I tell you what, it was pretty good. It was pretty good to be in that company of people. And I know the story fairly well because I was down in Albany when we first started recording some of it, and I was doing some radio recording work of it as well, which I still have, and there's a couple still to be used. But I just thought that it was pretty strong of those people that turned up, particularly Stolen Generations people, but very strong to be able to tell those stories and those incredible stories that they do have as survivors. Thing is, that disconnection was felt throughout the generations, and you can still see it today. And I think about that, but yesterday was very special for me because I was able to see that come to life, that film, and that film with, the factual information, as Jim put it, white speak, I was interested in that sort of term. But the film, it's something not to be missed, especially if you see yourself, you know, as a student of history, you want to know knowledge about WA, you've got to go along and see this type of film. Our listeners out in Radio Land on the various networks should go along and see that. See it on social media as well, as much as you can get about it, because you're getting real stories, real life stories from people who are still survivors. And yes, they haven't got a compensation yet. That needs to come along fairly soon, because people are dying, as Jim said in one of his comments on the film.
Wayne, I should have asked you at the outset of this interview, where you from? Who's your mob?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm Noongar Yamatji. Certainly from down in Perth way, born in Pinjarra. So my mob are scattered throughout the west, the Hart, southwest, I should say, the Hart families, and then the Binder family through the Lower Murchison and that as well. But yeah, certainly been a part of Perth for a long time. Live in Geraldton at the moment. Yes, I did work on this program, but Jim and company have just taken it from strength to strength. Just fantastic the way. The beautiful thing is that the audience you get to in an RTM setting are the people that don't normally or wouldn't normally listen to the people on the street when calling for rally, or the people listening to it on our radio. So that's a good thing. And fairly progressive listeners they are too, in RTRFM, so, and on radio. So, you know, they're able to embrace these types of stories. And what a story that is, you know, genocide in the World Fire State. I just thought it was good, and good to see people in that audience.
Yeah, Wayne, it was really special and really great to see you there. I mean, I was with you down there in Albany, and to see the great work that you're doing in terms of that podcasting for radio, and, you know, the bravery of the mob coming forward and sharing their stories. What message would you like to leave with our listeners out there in Radio Land? As you know, it's going to Noongar Radio tomorrow, and then through the Great Southern by midday, down in Albany and Menang country. So what message would you like to encourage our listeners out there?
Have a look at the film. Have a listen to the radio, first up. Have a look at the film, but go in with an open mind and be able to say, you know, hey, I heard these stories, these first accounts. Those people are pretty strong to be able to tell those stories of what happened to them, yourself, Tonge. You know, taken away at 3 years of age. Those people are pretty strong. That's the message. Go and listen to people with some real stories to tell. Go and see it on the screen. There are some real stories to tell out there. Compensation's got to come along, surely, fairly soon. And people need to be held accountable. In this case, the government needs to be held accountable.
And it's a very good place to end it on, Wayne. Thank you for your time and encouraging more people, no matter who you are, where you're from, to get along to see genocide in the Wildflower State. Thanks for being part of Mudich Mag, Wayne Binder.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know where that hour went.
Yeah, Jade, I don't know where it went. It was very quick. It's always runs away from you, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, like I get in here with yourself and Jimbo and I wonder where the time went to. I guess for me, I just want to leave a last message for our listeners out there. And it's from the late Rob Riley. Don't let the National Inquiry or the removal of Aboriginal children be swept under the carpet.
Tonji Hansen, thanks for your time on the program. Jodie Hoffman here signing off as well with Tonji.